Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Happy Tuesday and welcome to another edition of Global Leader Radio. The purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all who seek to optimize their leadership acumen. We achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways, including resources and advice that have led to the personal and professional success of our guests. And we've got a good one today. So today's topic is centered on, does your mindset influence your ability to lead? And with that overview, we welcome today's guest, Mr. Scott Schickler. So Scott is founder and CEO of Magic Wand Foundation and the founder and CEO of Accent Corporation, a multi-million dollar company that specializes in No Child Left Behind software used in school districts in more than 20 states. So during his over 20 years as an entrepreneur, he has created many businesses, all connected to youth empowerment and improvement. So Scott is considered one of the world's leading experts on youth empowerment, and has personally taught over 20,000 students and 10,000 teachers the art of personal achievement. So in the late 1980s, Scott was an early pioneer as VP of the National Foundation for Teaching Entrepreneurship. And in the late 1990s, he founded Educational Designs That Generate Excellence, or EDGE, where he coached youth in the art of entrepreneurship. So Scott and his team spent 5 years researching, interviewing and studying thousands of success stories around the globe, and what emerged were seven mindsets that have literally changed the course of people's lives. Scott has a business degree from Fordham University in New York City, where he founded the Fordham Entrepreneurs Club. He's married and the father of two children. So given that overview, we welcome Scott Schickler to today's edition of Global Leader Radio. So how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks, Alvin. Appreciate being here.
And it's great to have you. So to begin with, please tell us a little bit about you, the part I didn't already tell, starting with your original birthplace and your home and a bit about your work experience and take us up to the present.
Sure. Well, thank you. I grew up in New York, in Long Island, New York. And, I think probably very similar to a lot of people. My parents actually divorced when I was a kid. And I can remember, one day asking my mom for some money to go to the movies. And I think I was probably 12, 13 years old. And she looked at me. She said, I'm not a bank, right?
So, money doesn't grow on trees, right?
Right. So that was when I learned I needed to make some money. I also learned an interesting lesson, and that is there's a minimum wage to get a job. You know, I didn't know that. I just walked into some places, asked to see if, I could get hired. And they asked my age and they said I was too young. Well, I kind of found out by accident that there's no minimum age to be an entrepreneur. Right. So thus began my entrepreneurial career at a young age. And so growing up in New York, when the snow fell, I got a shovel and I made some money shoveling driveways. And, when the leaves fell off the trees, I grabbed a rake. And in the summers, I mowed lawns. And in the spring, I cleaned garages.
Wow. Very good. So the Wall Street Journal has referred to you as a serial and parallel entrepreneur. And so please explain to our listeners what that means.
Yeah. Well, when my kids hear serial entrepreneur, they wonder, is it Fruit Loops or Cheerios? What's dad selling these days? I think serial entrepreneur is once I launched my first business, even back as a kid, I had an affinity for being an entrepreneur. I loved the idea of innovating and creating something, often from nowhere. So I just began starting one business after the next, and that continued on in my adult life. I helped pay for college by starting a multi-service business. I ended up having 60 high school and college kids working for me, and the concept was you call one phone number and whatever you need done, we had this service company to do it. And And that continued on in my adult life. And so the serial entrepreneur is just sort of one business after the next. And the Wall Street Journal, they stumped me for a moment when they called me a parallel entrepreneur. I had actually had to look that one up. I was hoping it wasn't anything bad. But a parallel entrepreneur is someone who has multiple businesses in different industries, often at the same time. And upon reflection, I realized that was the case. I owned several restaurants while I had software companies, while I had a real estate business and seminars and books. And so I guess I was guilty of being a parallel entrepreneur as well.
So they pegged you correctly.
They did. They did. And I think, you know, really what they were getting at the heart of is I love business and I love being around people. And managing and leading and innovating and just everything about entrepreneurship.
Now, when I looked at your bio, it didn't say what your undergrad degree happened to be in. Was it business or no?
You know, it's interesting. I was just with my kids on spring break last week, and my oldest son is 17, and he is now going on college visits. And so I got to take him back to New York, where I went to school at Fordham. And we were talking about it, and my wife actually went to Fordham. I've learned this term. They call it a double legacy. It's supposed to give your kids a little leg up if they want to go to your same school. And so I thought, you know, wouldn't it be great to have my son follow in our footsteps? And, you know, we went on all these tours. Unfortunately, it's the only one he determined he doesn't want to go to. But while we were there, it made me think and reflect on my own college experience and how hard it was for me to actually get through and graduate. And so the question he asked me, he said, what did you major in? And I said, well, you know what? I started out with one major. I went in thinking I was going to become an accountant. My father was an accountant.
Okay.
People said I was good with numbers. And often that's how we're advised as to what to pursue in school and even in our careers. You know, what are you good at?
What do you happen to be good at?
And my grandmother said, oh, you know, accountant, that's a steady job, you know.
It's a good job.
It's a good job. You'll make good security. And again, it's sort of common advice. You know, they mean it with love.
Right.
And that's where I began my pursuits. And then I realized I am just bored with this. I mean, some people are passionate about it, right? I get it. But not me. And so my journey then became, what do I need to do to get out of this place?
Get me out of here.
And I remember the dean of the business school, which is where I was enrolled, she said, well, what do you like? What classes do you like? And I said, oh, I like this marketing class. I like this communication class. And I said, how come there's no entrepreneurship class? And she said, you're right. I said, how come there's no entrepreneurship club? She said, you're right. What are you going to do about it? I said, me? I'm just a student. You're the dean. She said, what are you going to do about it? So I started the first entrepreneur club at Fordham, and I convinced the dean to launch the first entrepreneurship class at Fordham.
Nice. Nice.
So I ended up with a marketing / entrepreneurship degree. It was the first time they ever awarded that as well.
Well, that's too funny. When did you start your first business, and can you tell us about your early entrepreneurial experiences? I know you've touched on those as we've spoken thus far.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first real business that I was in actually was I was a college student. And,
okay.
And I remember after my freshman year of college, and I had boarded in high school. I went to a military academy. My mom said it was a little too tough to deal with, so she shipped me off to a military academy, which helped, got me a scholarship into college.
Great discipline.
Yes. And so my wife wonders, though, why I won't make the bed now, since I told her I did my time already. Here I was at Fordham, and after spending that first year at school, I was wondering, you know, what am I going to do over the summer? I didn't want to go home and live with mom after I'd been away for literally 5 years, you know.
Right.
And I asked some friends, what are you doing for the summer? And they said, oh, we're going out to get a job out in the Hamptons, you know, sort of this wealthy community. And they were going to become waiters and waitresses. And so I said, well, that sounds great. I packed everything I owned into a used car. I drove a couple hours, very naive. I went in to apply for a job as a waiter, and the manager asked me what experience I have in the food business. I really didn't have any, but I said, well, I do eat three meals a day. I was hired, but not as a waiter. I was hired to wash dishes.
There you go.
And I quickly realized I needed to make some extra money, and so I started running some little, put up some flyers and ads. You know, starving college student, willing to earn money, we'll do anything. Call Scott. And one thing led to another. The calls kept coming in that I had to start asking my friends if they would work for me.
Wow.
I only had about five friends at the time. Three of them laughed, and two said, "How much?"
Okay.
And it grew to where I had 60 people working for me, and I had a business. We were doing over $5,000 a week in sales, and sort of by accident, I was able to pay my way through school.
Now, how old were you then again?
Oh, I was probably 19, 20 years old.
My goodness. That sounds pretty good. Well, the reason why I ask is because I have three kids, and none of them have ever come to me with those type of entrepreneurial aspirations, but I guess there's still time.
Out of necessity, you know. I mean, I lived in my car for 2 weeks because I also thought you pay rent at the end of the month. So I was broke and living in my car and washing dishes at night and trying to scrap it together during the day.
So is that one of the keys? It has to be a necessity to get them started at a young age? Because my daughters obviously don't have to do it out of necessity.
Well, I tell you,
at least they don't think they do.
Yeah. So I've got two kids, right? And my youngest he has this entrepreneurial gene. My oldest son just doesn't seem to have a need for money. His hobbies are reading, and, you know, he tends to get books as gifts. He doesn't really seem to need currency in his life.
Yeah.
And therefore he's really not motivated the same way that my younger son is.
Interesting. I understand you've also made several acquisitions. We talked a little bit in the green room that you've grown from a couple of different methods, organically and then from acquisitions. And so how has that differed than starting business from the ground up?
It's a really huge difference, and it's one that I'm very glad that I've had the experience. Because in my 20s, I ended up starting multiple businesses, and they were all from the ground up. They're all, you know, I use the term bootstrap.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, never really had a lot of money, and so you take an idea and you do what you can to get it off the ground, and you try and keep your overhead as low as possible. I remember listening to Brian Tracy once talk about, you know, one of the secrets of business is simply, you know, surviving long enough so that you figure out the formula where you make more than you spend, right? And so having your costs as low as possible was one of those ways of doing
that. That's
important. Well, around 2001, I was changing industries. I wanted to get into with the technology boom. I wanted to get into education technology. And I realized that it was a very competitive space, and you know, school districts are very particular who they do business with, as they should.
Right.
And so it would be really hard as a startup,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get in there. They'd ask the question, who else are you working with? And it's, you know, it's a very tough question to answer when you're just getting started. And I thought it would be, you know, the death knell to do a startup in education technology at that time. And I thought, well, you know what? What if I could find a really good company that had you know, raving fan customers. Everything was going well, except maybe they just needed a few things. You know, maybe they needed a little help on sales and marketing. Maybe they needed a little bit of capital. Maybe, you know, they just sort of leveled off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I set this criteria out, and I started looking for companies and ended up looking at about 50 companies.
Okay.
Ultimately found a wonderful company that was in the education space. They made software for students with special needs. They had raving fan customers. They were doing around $600,000 or so in sales, breaking even,
mm-hmm.
and hitting some normal challenges that a business that size would hit. And I decided that I wanted to buy that company, but not buy it where, you know, it was an exit, where they got to take a big paycheck and go home. But I called it a transition to an exit. I said, let's join together. I'm going to acquire your company, but we're going to grow this thing together.
Okay.
And then together, there'll be another exit down the road. And so I made that acquisition in 2002. And the year after that, I bought their competitor,
mm-hmm.
in 2003. And I've now done about four or five of these things over the last decade. And it is different because you're now working with other entrepreneurs, bringing them into the fold. And so it's not a startup. And so management and leadership roles are a little trickier in that regard.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for your time to explain that. As I mentioned in the open, the Wall Street Journal has described you as both a serial and a parallel entrepreneur with the experience of starting and growing several ventures in diverse industries. And so with that in mind, it appears to me your sweet spot is really focused in the area of youth empowerment and improvement. Then this project, the one that we're talking about today, the Seven Mindsets, comes about, and you're making an intellectual contribution in a diverse industry, even from those that you are already diverse in. So can you talk about whether this latest project is a conscious shift in your area of expertise, or rather adding another subdimension to the youth empowerment and improvement?
Sure. So I started working with young people the early 90s. Someone asked me, I had some entrepreneurial success, as we talked about, and someone asked me to go talk to some kids about business. And I said, my first reaction was, wait a second, kids, what are you talking about? How old? They said, well, fourth graders. I said, fourth graders aren't going to be interested in business. And even if they were, could they comprehend it? And they said, just get in there and talk to them about entrepreneurship and you'll see for yourself. So I remember walking into this classroom and there were 40 fourth graders in this room. And one of the kids asked me, he said, Mr. Schickler, what would it take for me to become an entrepreneur? And for me to have my own business. And just as I was about to answer that question, the teacher who was standing in the back of the room gave an answer.
Hmm.
And she said, first of all of you need to finish fourth grade. and then go on and finish elementary school, middle school, high school, go to college, get an MBA degree, write a huge business plan, raise a lot of money. And then she had a little chart that said what their odds were going to be, 7 out of 10 chance of failing. And I watched them. She was in the back of the room. They were facing me. And I literally watched all these kids shrug down in their seats. They just lost their enthusiasm. And what hit me, Alvin, in that moment was I had heard that before.
Hmm.
And the difference was I knew that wasn't the only way because I had gone through it. So I had to respect what she was saying. And I looked at those kids. I said, well, that's one way of doing it. But there's a wholesaler across the street. And you can go over there and take a few dollars and buy something at wholesale and make some signs and sell it to your friends and family for retail. And, you can be in business this afternoon. And that launched a business where I ended up going into the youth entrepreneurship field. And for 5 years, I wrote books on how to start businesses for kids. I trained teachers how to teach entrepreneurship. And I ended up not only 5 years because I sold that company to another company, and we started launching entrepreneurship camps, trainings for teachers. And so for 10 years, I was in the business of educating kids on entrepreneurship. And it was wonderful, and it was an empowering experience. What I learned was that entrepreneurship was a life skill that everyone can and should learn.
Hmm.
It really didn't matter whether a kid stayed in business. It was one of the best ways to teach math and reading and writing and communication skills.
And get them excited about that.
And get them excited, to make a connection between what they were learning and how it would apply in the real world. Well, that leads to something that you've asked me about, which is this research that I've done over the last 5 years. So I had this real simple question. What do the happiest and most successful people in the world have in common? Because my software company is also an education company. We reach over 1 million kids a year in 20 states and internationally as well. And I thought if we could get this answer, that we could share it with the kids we reach and the school districts that we serve, and it would just be our way of just passing on some information. So I asked this one guy in the company to go, what I thought was going to be a Google search, and come back and tell me what the happy and successful people have in common. Well, he came back the next day, and he asked for more time. And I said, you can't find the answer on Google? He said, no, Scott. We're a data company. I know you like pure data. It's not that I can't find the answer. It's that there's so much information, I need more time. I said, fine. Come back the next day. He comes back the next day, and he says, hey, can I borrow somebody else from another division to help me on this?
Wow.
I said, why do you need help? He said, well, because the information is conflicting. He said, I started by looking at some of the most respected books on the field of business success and happiness, and clearly there are different approaches that contradict each other. Well, Alvin, I didn't know it at the time, but one person turned into two people, turned into 10 people, turned into a three-year project with over $3 million invested just trying to get to the bottom of that question. What do the happiest and most successful people in the world have in common?
My goodness, I didn't realize that question cost so much.
If I knew, I probably wouldn't have sought the answer.
So it's pretty interesting because I had a list of questions I wanted to ask you, and so now you've kind of taken my mind to on a different path. So tell us what you studied and exactly what it is you studied. I understand. Well, maybe I don't understand why the subject was important to you.
Okay, the subject was important to me because, you know, like I said, I've been in education for over 20 years, and as a parent, we all want simple things for our kids. We just want them to grow up to be happy and successful, right? And really success on their own terms. And every teacher wants the same thing. We have youth organizations that want the same thing. We have government agencies that want the same thing. I mean, we spend billions and billions of dollars every year simply trying to produce citizens that grow up to be happy and successful, right? We're all in agreement on that. But then when you look at the results of what's happening, I mean, I'm not sure if you know this, but there's about 60 million kids that go to public school in the U.S. today. And out of those 60 million kids, it's estimated that one out of three, talking about 18 to 20 million kids in school today, are not expected to graduate.
Really?
They will drop out or fail out of high school. Now, as shocking as that is, if you know what happens to kids that drop out of high school, it makes it even worse because they're three times more likely to go to prison. They're twice as likely to end up on welfare. These kids end up earning less, like $500,000 a year less than someone with a high school degree over the span of their life.
Wow.
And get this, and this is really sad, but more kids took their own life over the last 10 years than American soldiers who lost their lives in the 10-year Vietnam War.
Really?
So we all want kids to grow up to be happy and successful. There's a problem, okay? Doctors believe that one out of three kids are walking around with depression. Last year, the same number of kids that graduated college also filed bankruptcy. These are not definitions of people living happy and successful lives. And if you think this is just a phase of adolescence, they grow up and they become happy and successful adults, well, according to a recent Gallup poll, when they surveyed, I think, about 500,000 adults who were employed, and they asked the question, are you passionate about what you do for a living? 80% of the adults said no.
Hmm.
So we've got major problems, a simple disconnect. And I just wanted to know, you and I do know people who are happy and successful.
Right.
There's books written about them.
No
we
doubt.
Know them. Some of them live in our house.
That's
you
right.
know, we work with them.
Some of them sit across from us.
There you go, right? So we know it exists. The question is, what are they doing differently? Right? The 20% who say they are passionate, well, why?
Hmm.
And I think as an entrepreneur, that's what's driven me my whole life. When I got into the restaurant business, you know, so many restaurants fail, yet there are a few that do really well. So what I did was I studied those that did well, and I tried to emulate their strategy. Well, the same is true. If I want my kids to grow up to be happy and successful, why not study those who are happy and successful and pass that information on?
Which makes total sense to me.
That's where the question came from.
Okay.
I just never expected the answer to take so long.
Okay. Well, we're listening to Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with passionate people who care. And if you can't tell from listening to your radio at this point or your internet connection, Scott Schickler is extremely passionate about what he does. He spent over 20 years as an entrepreneur and has created many businesses, most of them connected to youth empowerment and improvement, or all of them connected to youth empowerment and improvement?
One way or another. Even my restaurants, I found a way to run. I created a program called Camp CEO, where we would run little business camps for kids for our customers. And I had an ice cream challenge for kids in the restaurant
Too
just to
cool.
get them to use their creativity.
Well, very nice, very nice. So when we think about what you've been talking about thus far, which is what you studied and why this subject was important to you and why you're passionate. So obviously, I think you've painted a picture as to why leaders should pay attention to your research findings. Mm-hmm. How do mindsets differ from surface mindsets or esoteric mindsets?
Yeah. So let me tell you this, Alvin. To get to the bottom of the research, I mean, we interviewed over 400 of some of the most successful people in the world. We deconstructed over 200 books on the subject. We spent thousands and thousands of hours researching what happy and successful people have in common. The good news is we discovered what they do have in common. First, let me tell you what they don't have in common, okay? Some of this won't surprise you, and some of it may really surprise you. So first of all, happiness and success have nothing to do with gender, right? No surprise there.
Okay.
It really has nothing to do with where you live in the world either. It doesn't have anything to do with your political views or your religious beliefs. Here's where it does get interesting. Happiness and success also has nothing to do with whether you come from a loving home or a broken home.
Interesting.
Whether your family has money or you grow up poor. It also has very little to do with how far you go in school and the skills that you acquire throughout your life. And that's where I almost have to call a timeout on the field.
Yes.
Because as leaders, right, all of us focus on skill sets. I mean, school in general is a machine to teach skill sets. And it's not that skill sets are bad. It's just that if the mindset is off, the skill set can take you in the wrong direction even faster.
So what you're actually saying is that there is a sequence.
Yes.
Mindset comes before skill set?
That's right. Because what we discovered is that what happy and successful people do have in common is their mindsets, how they think. And in particular, we were able to identify 7 mindsets. And probably the most shocking part of our research was the discovery that the overwhelming majority of teenagers are inadvertently thinking and acting in direct opposition to those 7 mindsets. And that's it's sort of a nice way for me also to segue into saying these kids grow up and the overwhelming majority of adults are inadvertently thinking and acting in direct opposition to the 7 mindsets, which is why so many people are having a tough time finding passion in what they do for a living and why a lot of people fall short of their expectations in life.
Interesting. What does this tell us about the generational differences, either personally or professionally? Does it really matter when you did your research unearth anything in terms of, you know, the fact that we've got Gen X, we've got millennials, we've got baby boomers, and we've got the great age? It doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, it cuts across.
No,
mindset is mindset.
Yeah, it is. And what's happened, though, when you talk about it from a generational perspective, what's happening is one generation passes on to the next their beliefs in how to live a happy and successful life. And we simply have it wrong. And the problem is, and I can tell you, we've labeled what we call the counter mindsets. We've labeled them as well because no parent is trying to sabotage their child.
Okay.
No teacher is trying to sabotage their students. So this is inadvertent. And let me give you an example because it's so simple in a sense. You mentioned something earlier. You said money doesn't grow on trees. Mm-hmm. Now, I've said that to my kids before, before I did my research, I'll tell you that. But I've said, and I know why I said that. You know, it's usually we're in a store, they've asked for something, and I'm trying to teach them a lesson about hard work and how when you work hard and you earn something, then you can get the things you want in life, right? But little sayings like that, little adisms, little truisms, we call them memes. It's a thought that gets into your mind and it acts in your subconscious, okay?
That's M-E-M-E-S.
M-E-M-E. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Meme, right? What happens is they get lost in translation because when we interviewed thousands and thousands of high school students and I asked them, what does money doesn't grow on trees? What does that mean to you? Mm-hmm. I can boil down their answer into one word. They all basically said the same thing, scarcity. See, to them, it means there's not enough to go around. Now, as an adult, our conscious mind, we you know, when we hear money doesn't grow on trees, we get the meaning. We right. understand it. But what happens is, where does the action in our life really come from? It comes from our subconscious.
Correct.
You know, when you're driving and you're driving home, you're thinking about something else, and you end up in your driveway and you're like, wait a second, how did I get here? Happens to all of us. It's because the subconscious is taking control. So these little lessons get lost in translation when we're kids. They leave an imprint in our subconscious. And when we pass it on one generation to the next, it gets lost. So like curiosity killed the cat. You know, I remember saying that to my kid when he was learning to walk. He was doing the, they call it the counter surf, right? He's got his hands up and he's learning to walk. And I see him moving towards a hot stove. And I reached and I grabbed him. Hey, money. I said, hey, curiosity killed the cat, right? Now, I know what that means, but could you imagine if we really, really believe that? I mean, we wouldn't be sitting here with light on, right? We
correct.
Wouldn't be talking on the radio.
That's correct.
Right? So it takes curiosity is an integral part of success in life.
Especially
right?
intellectual curiosity.
Yeah.
Correct.
Don't make the same mistake twice, right? It's implying that mistakes are bad. Well, every entrepreneur, every leader knows that mistakes are an integral part of success. Right, the home run kings often the strikeout kings, and so these little things, these memes become counter mindsets, and what we've discovered is that people are just walking around with these counter mindsets, but they seem to make rational sense, and so nobody's challenging them, and then
understood.
They come from people who love you, so you know people wish good things upon you. It's just slightly off.
So these counter mindsets, Scott, do they sit on a continuum with the mindset? So is there a counter mindset to off balance the mindset? And then can a person determine where they are along that continuum and then understand what they need to do to get better?
Absolutely. So if we take the first one, you know, maybe if we put some real meat on this,
there
okay?
you go.
So the first mindset that we labeled is what we call everything is possible. All right, everything is possible. So let me tell you, I interviewed Sir Richard Branson, okay, and
Virgin Airlines,
yes,
et cetera.
Yes, right. And so he was actually interviewed by my partner Mitch Schlimmer, and I was in the room during the interview.
But you can claim that.
Yeah, I just. We were just talking about Branson's company is paying the airfare for some kids from London to come over to our Ultimate Life Summit that we run at Disney every year for 150 kids. So he was on my mind today. But back in the interview days, Mitch Schlimmer interviewed him, and I'm in the room. And at the end of the interview, the question was, if you had a chance to do it again, Sir Richard Branson, right? If you had a chance to do it again, is there anything you would do differently? And he said, yeah, two things. Number one, I would start younger. Now, I had to pause there for a second because I had done my research on him. He started his first business at the age of 9.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, hearing him say he would start younger, okay, well, you know, how much younger, right? But the second thing he said is he would dream bigger. Now, when you hear a billionaire who owns over 200 companies say that if he could do it again, he would dream bigger, he understands something that he has a mindset that we have labeled everything is possible. So the question is, well, wait a second. Does that mean that people are going around telling kids not to dream big? Not exactly, but the issue is this. A lot of people are concerned about kids dreaming too big and missing. You know, you don't want to. We all know the pain of missing out on a dream and a goal. I experience it all the time, right? It's just part of being your best, right? Part of hitting that home run is to swing hard and you miss.
Right.
Nobody likes the feeling of missing. And so we try and protect our kids and ourselves from that pain.
By hedging the bet.
Exactly, right? Sometimes, you know, I do this. You make a list of things you have to do, and sometimes you've already done one of those things. I put it on the list just for the satisfaction of crossing it off. No risk there, right? So all of these things we do to sort of protect ourselves a little bit, but the bottom line is the real damage, it's not in dreaming too high and missing. It's in setting your dreams too low and hitting the mark. Hmm. So then you end up settling in life, and you don't live to your full potential. You know, I do this all the time. I'll ask, and anyone that's listening that can raise one of their hands as high as they can, go ahead and do it right now, as high as you can. Now, with your hand as high as you can, listen as I ask this next question. Can you get your hand about an inch or 2 inches higher without standing up? You know, my guess is if you're like everyone else I've asked, you can do it.
Especially if there's $1 million tied to that, right?
And so the reason is that even the listener doesn't understand his or her true potential. And so the point is to lean in to the mindset of everything is possible. You don't have to believe it like it's a law of nature, mm-hmm. you know, or a mm-hmm. law of science. But lean into that mindset of everything is possible.
Very interesting. Again, we're talking to Scott Schickler, who has developed a can it be considered a framework, perhaps, the seven mindsets?
I think it is a framework. I think it's a new lexicon. It's a language that we can all share and we can talk about. So when I say everything is possible now under that context, see, it doesn't take long to learn it, right?
That's correct.
And you know, we've tried to label it in ways that kids can understand it, and parents and teachers and, you know, frankly, adults and leaders can use this same language. You know what it means. You know the difference between stretching yourself and just settling.
So it can actually end up being more like what we call transformational vocabulary.
Absolutely.
Vocabulary of the seven mindsets. Why is the state of one's mind so important to one's ability to lead, in your opinion?
Well, let's look at it this way, okay? From a leader's perspective, wanting to get the most out of your team, your organization. I mean, that's what business is, right? It's trying to accomplish something with as few resources as possible, right? To try and make the difference.
Optimization.
Well, if you have a mindset of scarcity, which is the opposite, and sometimes it's not as stark as that, mm-hmm. right? But if you're not stretching, if you're not reaching, then you'll never optimize. Okay? And if you're worried about mistakes and failure, then that will hold you back from optimizing, right? But think of it this way. Your employees, your team, whoever you're managing, your company, and if you're in the classroom, you could say your students. If you're a parent, you could say your children. They all will rise or fall to the level of expectation that you set for them.
Yeah, I remember hearing the Pygmalion principle. Described several times. Tony Robbins is one of the ones I listened to and heard him talk about the Pygmalion principle. So, yes, very interesting. So let's talk about the first mindset, actually the second mindset. Yep. You've already talked about the first.
Right.
Can you take us to the second one, perhaps?
Sure. So we've labeled the second one passion first.
Okay.
And on the surface, again, people listening might say, well, wait a second. It's not like anybody's ever telling you not to follow your passion. And I think that's true. I think most people talk about trying to identify your passion. But it becomes a sequencing thing. And let's go back to childhood for a moment, all right? You can use my story of trying to become an accounting major or think of your own life experience, think of advice you've given to others. But when a young person is trying to decide what they want to study in school, the questions often come up, what are you good at?
Okay.
Right? And then they quickly go to, well, what does the world need? What is the marketplace looking for?
Where's the gap?
And people that are looking to start a business, I get calls all the time. Hey, Scott, what's the next business thing I should start? You know, where's the trend going? Where's the marketplace going? And there's plenty of advice. You know, Wayne Gretzky, right? He said, you know, when they asked him, how come you're so good at hockey? He said, I don't skate where the puck is. I skate where the puck is going. That's become this metaphor in business. Where are the trends? Get ahead of the trends, right? It makes rational sense, which is why people follow that advice.
Mm-hmm.
It's why, you know, given the option of choosing two jobs, you analyze which one's going to pay me more. Where's the greatest room for growth? Where are the benefits? Right. There was a surge in kids studying Mandarin for 5-6 years because they said that's the language, right? That's the trends. Study Mandarin, you'll be ahead of the curve. Right, so all of that makes rational sense, except it's the exact opposite thing that the happiest and most successful people in the world do. They have the opposite mindset. They take it from this perspective. If money didn't matter, what would I do for free? How would I spend my time? And that is an inside-out question. That says ignore the world and the trends, and it says what gives me joy? How would I spend my time? And if you can understand that, if you can get to the bottom of that, and you don't have to nail it, mm-hmm. you just have to lean into it.
Okay.
Then start to take classes around that. All right. Pursue that as your hobby. Read books on the subjects. Given the choice of jobs, don't choose based on salary and pay and benefits and growth opportunity. Choose based on your passion. Right. And what happens is if we play this example through, what happens to the people who are passionate about what they do for a living? Well, other people that they work with can see it on their face every day. They can see it in their posture. They're a joy to be around. They study more. They want to go to seminars. Other people want to be around. It's contagious.
Yes.
And so what happens when they hit a roadblock, which we all do?
They figure a way around it.
Exactly, right? And so when that happens, it's the passion that drives you further into your company, in your business that you start. And people want to be around you. They want to do business with you. And 95% of the people we interviewed, by following their passion first, they ended up making more money than they ever thought was possible.
Hmm.
So they didn't put money first, but they ended up very wealthy. But when you put your passion first, happiness, it's not a destination. It's not when you get a bonus. It's not when you get a raise. It's not when you get promoted. It's not the obtainment of something material. When you're putting your passion first, then happiness is the journey. Right? You're happy now, which is the first thing we all want in our lives is happiness. Now, Alvin, there's a saying that the two greatest days in your life are the day you're born and the day you discover why.
Hmm.
And so learning and finding your passion and then organizing your life around it is one of the key mindsets to a life of happiness and success.
Great point. Great answer. And so should we assume that passion equals engagement, passion equals fulfillment, passion, of course, equals a happy life across the board?
I think so. And let's look at it from the opposite perspective just for a moment. You know, they now know what the number one cause of heart attacks is. It's job dissatisfaction. It's stress from job dissatisfaction. And the most common time that heart attacks occur are Monday mornings at 9 a.m., you know? I mean, it's funny, but it's really no joke because we're not following our passions.
And you're not wanting to get up and go there. Now, not again.
Yeah, and if you're a leader, right, I know your listeners are, I'm not encouraging people to run out and leave their jobs and leave their business. That should be the last resort. But really what you should examine is, are you aligning your people with their passion? You know, I like to think that about 80% of your time should be focused on what you're passionate about. So that old example from good to great, you know, you have the right people on the bus, and then are they sitting in the right seats? Use passion first as a way of gauging are they in the right seats. And when you're making your next hire, use passion first as a model for hiring people that are passionate about their positions. And if you ultimately discover that someone's not passionate at work, or you're not passionate at work, or you're not passionate in your business, and if you've tried everything else, the greatest gift you can give yourself is the gift of moving on to something else that you are more passionate about.
Deselect and move on.
Absolutely.
Which is something that I've noticed that there are several people who choose not to do because they did start with the money first, they did start with the security first, and then they're ultimately not happy in their job.
Well, it's a scary thought to move on because how am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to pay tuition? You know, how about this? There are people, just to go even deeper on this thing, there are people who actually make a good living what they're doing. They're considered experts in their field. They were passionate about something, right? So it's not like they ended up in the wrong industry. They were passionate, but they've outgrown it.
Hmm.
And it's okay to give yourself permission to move on. Right? We don't have to stay with the same thing our whole life. It's okay to give yourself permission. So it's not like, you know, if you're not feeling it, well, rejuvenate, right? There's plenty of things you can do. But ultimately, it's okay to move on.
So working well with others is obviously so important to entrepreneurs and business leaders. We talked a little bit about what people can do about it, which is to ultimately move on mentally and also move on figuratively and literally. So why do so many people struggle with it?
Well, working with others is a key to success no matter what you're doing, right? And we've actually labeled this the third mindset. We call it we are connected. That's the third mindset. We are connected. And I think the reason a lot of people struggle with this and have challenges with this is because when we're growing up, our relation to other people is often adversarial. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to make a school team, and it's competitive. You're trying to make the play, and it's competitive.
Another scarcity situation,
yeah,
like zero-sum game.
At least that's the mindset you have, right?
Yes.
When we know that that's not really the case, but that's where we grow up. You're trying to get a job, and you're competing, you know, 100 people for one position or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We view people – that's where you get these expressions. It's a dog-eat-dog world, right?
Right.
And then if you take this into the workplace, you know, I bet you know people who don't like to ask others for help. And you say, well, you know, why is that? And well, if you think about it, sometimes they don't want to look like they don't know the answer. Right? It's a sign of weakness. So many of us are scared to be vulnerable when it's the exact opposite. When you allow yourself to be a little more vulnerable, that's where you actually get your strength from.
Yeah, exactly right.
See, the greatest way to achieve success is by working with others, for others, and through others. That's the exact opposite thing that we learn growing up. Now, inadvertently, because nobody's saying, hey, don't work well with others.
Mm-hmm.
We're always saying, we're talking about team, right?
Right.
You talk about teamwork. There's skill set training on teamwork, but it's not a skill set issue. It's a mindset
That's right.
issue.
That's right.
And if we can get the mindset right, and you know, what I like to say is seek out the synergies in all relationships and learn to empower one another. You want to achieve your dream? Help somebody else achieve their dream.
First,
right? You want to get ahead in your life? Find out more about the people that work with you and what their needs are. When you can seek out the synergies, when you can look to help another person, then your life changes. And it changes first from that feeling inside of happiness and joy,
mm-hmm.
of connecting with others. See, vulnerability is about disconnection. It's about feeling like you're getting judged.
Right.
Right? You're not good enough. That's when you're vulnerable. The opposite, the way you break out of vulnerability is through empathy.
Hmm.
And the only way you get to empathy is when you try and see it from someone else's perspective. So many fights at work, so many personal conflicts come from somebody trying to be right. If we just took the position that everyone is right from their own perspective, that's a we are connected mindset. That's trying to see it from the other side, and that's where the breakthroughs come from.
So from an intention perspective, it's almost as though what you're telling us with the we are connected, which is the third of seven mindsets, that we should begin with the intention that I think you're looking out for my best interest versus the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, you might call it a woo-woo way of looking at it, but when I think of we are connected, I think of, Alvin, if I'm going to do something for you, I'm actually doing it for me. And if I do something for me, I'm actually doing it for you. If I literally think of us as connected, then, you know, I by helping you, I'm helping me. By helping me, I'm helping we, right? I don't go to war with myself. You know?
Exactly right. You're not trying to do yourself personal damage. That's self-destructive,
that's
which
right.
is not what we're here for, right?
Yeah, if we had more of the we are connected mindset, we'd have less of the tragedies that we're facing, like the tragedy in Boston yesterday.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Scott, I'll tell you that typically when we have people join us in the studio for conversations much like we're doing today, what I find is that time flies, and when you look up at the clock, you know, suddenly 45 minutes has passed, and it looks like we're just two people having a conversation with a few million people listening in.
Right.
And so we're here spending some time with Scott Schickler, who is actually the guru and the entrepreneur behind the seven mindsets, and he's got a group of different channels through which you can access this. And so Scott will be showing up at the KSU Center tomorrow at 11:30 a.m.
Thursday,
I'm sorry. I'm glad you caught that. Today is Tuesday. But actually, when you listen to this podcast, it'll probably be whenever. So at that point, let's call out the date. So
yeah.
Today is the 16th. Right. So it would be actually April 18th.
April 18th at KSU, 11:30 to 1:30. There's a session there.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other things you're doing, because you mentioned something at Disney as well.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
We created something we call the Ultimate Life Summit. Everyone wants to live their best life. It's 7 days to learn the seven mindsets. And we have about 150 people come from all over the world. They spend a week with us at Disney. They learn the mindsets in the morning. They go to the Disney experience in the afternoon. It's designed for teenagers, and it's designed for those that influence them. So parents come, educators come, and we've recently launched a program to certify adults, coaches, and speakers, and anyone who works with young people. Also, though, we've taken the seven mindsets into the workplace because companies are learning that these same seven mindsets apply to their day-to-day job. We call it seven mindsets at work. And so people come in, and they can come to Disney. They can learn the mindsets, get certified, and go back to their own organizations and share it. So that's one thing that we do. We're running the next one this July 13th to 20th.
Okay.
But we've also written a book called The Seven Mindsets, and folks can find that if they're interested at sevenmindsets.com.
Perfect.
So we've put it in a book form. In about 2 weeks, we're launching a program called The Seven Mindsets Masterclass. It's an online program designed with videos, seven videos per mindset. So people can watch a five-minute video or less, and they can learn what the mindset is and learn four specific steps to apply in their own life.
So they can go deep in each one of the mindsets.
Yeah, exactly.
On your own time, on your own computer, at your own home, or
wherever you have an internet connection, you can get in there, learn the seven mindsets by watching videos. And what we've created is a life plan, an integrated life plan. So, you know, in business, I've written lots of business plans. Well, the same is true for your life. You know, if you want to get your life to the next level, you want to go from ordinary to extraordinary, it sometimes just takes a slight mindset shift. And so as you're learning these mindsets, what's important is to connect them to your own radical self-interest, your own interests and desires. So we've created a little life plan to help people do that.
Yeah, you are a fascinating gentleman, and I am so glad that you accepted the invitation to come and join us today. So is having the right mindset, I'm going to throw you a softball, is having the right mindset the most critical step to success?
I think it begins there, because if you don't have the right mindset, all the skill set training in your life, it certainly helps, right? Mm-hmm. But it also can accelerate pain and suffering and settling in life. And so it doesn't take much to have a mindset shift. And once you do that, the same skill sets you've already learned can accelerate your success.
So it's funny. Last week we had Michael J. Coles in with us, and Michael J. Coles actually kind of coined the phrase mindset, skill set, tool set. So if we follow those in sequence, the skill sets that I apply are directly correlated to the mindset I have, correct?
That's right. That's right.
Very interesting. How can people learn all the seven mindsets? You've kind of given us a couple of clues. Are there more?
You know, certainly, right, they can buy the book, they can sign up for the Seven Mindsets Masterclass, but I'll give you an easy one also. I write a weekly blog. It goes out. It's a letter. It gets published in some newspapers. It's grown over the years. Over 2 million people get it every Wednesday. If somebody goes to sevenmindsets.com, on the bottom left-hand side of the website, it says weekly blog.
I saw that.
They can sign up and get on this list, give an email address, Facebook, at Seven Mindsets is the Twitter account. We send out a daily quote every day, so something that someone famous and recognizable throughout history has said tied to one of the seven mindsets. I like to say we didn't invent them. We just labeled them and figured out a way to teach them to others so it sticks. But they can get a daily quote. They can get a weekly story. And that's another way of at least getting in the conversation.
Beautiful. How does Scott Schickler define leadership, both personally and professionally?
Wow. That's a great question. To me, it is about finding a way to live to your best. So personally, being a great leader is living to your own potential and maximizing the potential of others. And, in business, a lot of times companies talk about their brand. But I think the way you get to your full potential is instead of thinking about brand, you think about stand. What do you stand for? If you could raise the level of your dreams and connect it with a passion, you know, something you believe in, and if you go one step further and connect it to a cause you believe in, those are some of the key ingredients to being the best leader you can be and to living to your full potential.
Great. Thank you for that response. How would you describe your leadership style?
Well, my leadership style is it's more about trying to figure out, making sure I got people on my team that have bought into the mission. So before we hire, it's critical that people understand. We have a clear vision, that they understand what it is and that they want to be a part of it. And it's not that they don't want to make, you know, appropriate salary and benefits, but they're in it for more than that, because I know the journey always involves going off course. People always think success looks like a straight line and it's a squiggly line, and you never know it until you look back and you say, oh, wow, that, you know, that's what it takes. You never would have foreseen all those turns that actually take you to the right place. And so having people that have a mindset that buy into the vision and want to be there with you, so that when you hit that roadblock, they don't say, well, I didn't sign up for this, right? They just say, okay, that's a roadblock. What are we going to do together? So my job as a leader is to get the right people on the bus, to understand what they're passionate about, what drives them, to put them in those positions where they can, you know, where they can operate at their full capacity, to get them working well with others, you know, believing in that we are connected mindset. Another mindset we've labeled is 100% accountable. I hate it when people point fingers at others. It is about taking personal accountability for your own happiness and success. So, you know, we have a philosophy at our company is, you know, don't wait for somebody to tell you something. Take the initiative. And by the way, we're okay with mistakes here. Mm-hmm. We get it, right? And so it's just creating that environment that allows the talk that I'm sharing with you today to live and breathe.
Fantastic. So we've covered four mindsets. So we only have three left. Since we're over 50%, you care to give us perhaps a couple of others?
Yeah, I'll give you the thumbnails, okay, the thumbnail overview,
certainly.
Right? So another one is attitude of gratitude, okay? And on the surface, you know, we all know how important it is to be grateful. There's been research that says if you simply write down something you're grateful every day, you can add 7 years to your life. It's obviously a lot deeper than that,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And I'll give you two things that show you why it's deeper. Number one, when we are grateful, when something good happens in our life, we rarely allow it to stick around for a long time. You know, we achieve something, the next thing you know, we say, what's next? You know, that was great, but here's what's missing.
So you're saying we're not celebrating enough?
Long enough. Some people don't celebrate, period, and those that do rarely celebrate long enough, okay? Your life, you'd be so much happier, you'd achieve so much more at work if you actually took more time every day to be grateful. But here's the other side of attitude of gratitude. It is finding a way to be grateful for the challenging situations too. So when you lose the account, right? When something happens that you didn't want to happen, what most of us do is we dwell on it, we get scared about it, you know, we get so reactive on that subject that's where our energy and attention goes, and it brings you down, and it actually, you know, a lot of people believe attracts more of the same. So what we need to do is recognize that even the tragedies, even the things we don't want to happen, are opportunities for us to learn from, adjust, and grow, and that's worthy of being grateful for as well. And sometimes it's the hindsight. I've got a saying that everything is perfect. It's up to you to figure out why, right? And sometimes it does take that hindsight, but one of the things we asked people when we were interviewing them is to describe the worst day of their life. And when they did that, it's unbelievable how many people came back and said, you know, having thought about that and talked about it, I'd actually now call it the best day of my life.
Interesting.
It just happens. So attitude of gratitude. The next one is what we call live to give. And Live to Give is about connecting your passion with causes you believe in.
And community service, perhaps?
Yeah, but it's more
but
than
even
just,
bigger than
yeah,
that.
It's bigger than that because a lot of people grow up with social responsibility, mm-hmm. you know, and I happen to believe that we come from a very giving nation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more than that. See, it's not really about being socially responsible. It's about connecting it so you're on a social adventure, right? You know, your listeners know the example of Tom's Shoes, right? You buy a pair of shoes, and every time you buy a pair, the company gives a pair of shoes to some person who doesn't have shoes in the world, in our country and somewhere else in the world. That's part of the business proposition. So that's connecting what you do every day to causes you believe in. So it's not service on Sundays, right? It's not volunteering, you know, in the summers. It's
part of a lifestyle.
It's life, yeah. And so what I'm saying is, it's not that there's anything wrong with that, mm-hmm. right? It's just that the happiest and most successful people in the world have connected the two together. Live to Give, right? And you can do that at work as well. You can look, you know, how often do we do random acts of kindness for strangers and yet, you know, inadvertently snub our coworkers, right? So yeah. If you practice Live to Give at work, you don't have to go far. This isn't about, you know, tithing and throwing money, you know, at problems. This is just about simple decency with one another,
correct.
Making that everyday aspect of your life. Now, the last one is what we call the time is now. The time is now. And, you know, there's maybe two meanings to this. One is about enjoying the now, right? But the other is, you know, even this interview, right? Hopefully your listeners are getting something of value. But if they're just shaking their head saying, yeah, I get it, all that makes sense, and they do nothing with it, it's gone.
That's right.
Right? It's gone. And so the time is now is about taking all this stuff and taking action. And some of the reasons people don't act is because, you know, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to do it, or they're scared to do it, right? Or they want to wait for something to line up properly. Here's an analogy. You know, every day a plane takes off, let's say from New York flying to L.A., and before they have to take off, that pilot has to file a flight plan.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the path they're going to go from A to B. You know, and a lot of people are surprised to find out that plane goes off course 98% of the time. But it does get to L.A., you know, at the airport, right?
Correct.
It does get there. And it gets there because the pilot knows two very important things. One, he or she knows where they want to end up before they take off.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, see, from the moment that plane takes off, it's off course. And the magic word is adjust. And so the time is now is about just, you know, putting your best effort behind where you think you need to go, starting, right, taking action, leaning into it, and when you're off course, and you will be, just pause and say, here's where I am now, but that's where I want to end up, and make an adjustment. And it might not be the right adjustment, but it's not going to be the same one that took you off course to begin with. So it requires action.
And a constant reassessing of priorities sometimes too, correct?
Absolutely.
Ah, very good. So you have helped us to get through all seven of the mindsets at a very high level without giving away too much stuff. We do know that you're going to be at the KSU Center in 2 days from today. Today is Tuesday the 16th. You'll be there on the 18th from 11:30 to 1 o'clock, yep. And you'll be talking about the seven mindsets as well there.
That's right.
We know you've got multiple channels that people can access, including perhaps some online channels as well. And so when you think through your leadership legacy, what are you most proud of as a leader?
Oh, boy. I think you got some great questions, Alvin. I'm most proud of the work that I've done opening up young people's eyes to the true potential that they have in their life. I mean, that's really it. Success is more about significance. What are we doing in this world? What difference are we making? What's the meaning behind our life?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the meaning is it's not going to be all the businesses I've started or the money that I've made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be being a good dad to a couple of kids and a good husband to my wife of 22 years. But it's about empowering young people to live to their fullest potential. Because I think that the problems of the world can be solved in an often overlooked place, and that is the hearts and minds of today's young people. And if we could help them, that's really what I'm passionate about, is helping them live to their greatest potential and make their own meaningful impact on the world. When we do that, the problems of the world slowly fade away.
So is that why you do what you do?
Every day.
Interesting. So what advice would you have for a new leader?
I would assess your own mindsets. Okay. I would embrace it. The easiest thing we do in business, right, is you look at the scorecard, you see if something's working or not, right? Look at your own life. Is it working for you? Look at your life at work. Is it working? Do you feel joy? Do you feel like you're living and leading to your potential? If the answers are no, be grateful for that feeling, because now you can do something about it. And then just start to figure out what do you have to adjust? It's often just a tiny little adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff we've talked about today isn't rocket science.
That's right.
We just have to get over the habits that we formed through childhood, and which is why we do the daily quotes and the weekly stories. Because I like to say, learning the seven mindsets is eye-opening, but living them is life-changing.
So what are you doing to ensure you continue to grow and develop as a leader?
I love to read, and I love to set new goals and new heights. You know, one of the things I learned about happiness is it comes from doing new things. And so whenever you start to find yourself in a rut, it's impossible. You're not going to be able to sustain happiness that way. So I like to do some crazy things. I'm getting ready to go to South Africa in a couple of months, and just signed up to do some what do they call it? Cage diving with sharks.
Okay, got
yes,
it.
Yes.
Wow.
So I jumped out of an airplane and one that I didn't need to.
So there was somebody with you, hopefully, that made certain.
Yes,
okay.
And I learned. I go to a lot of charity events, and I'm sort of a sucker for these experiential things, because I'm trying to push myself. I'm trying to really enjoy life to the fullest.
So have you walked on the hot coals yet?
I've not done that.
Not done that one. Okay.
My gosh. I did. I'm going to be swimming with a whale shark at the Georgia Aquarium soon.
Nice.
But I mean, those are extreme examples. The point is, what we can do every single day is to stretch ourselves, ourselves.
Which makes total sense. And so we get to the end of our conversation, and so I'm going to ask you the second-to-last question I'll ask for today, and it has gone by like the blink of an eye between two eternities. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Well, I've read a lot of books, and I'm probably going to be doing a disservice to many of them by picking one. But I'll tell you that a book that really helped me was Good to Great. Good to Great, and it may not be the best leadership book that I read, but it really helped me and my company figure out this concept of making sure that people were in the right seats on the bus. And narrowing the focus of what we could be great at. There's a saying that good is the enemy of great. And far too often we find ourselves pursuing good and realizing it doesn't get us anywhere. And so this notion of striving to be great led me to push our company to be great and to push our team to be great.
Wow. Thank you for that response. And Scott, on behalf of our learning community, I truly appreciate you for accepting the invitation to join us today. And I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the future if we can work out our schedules. Would that be a deal?
Absolutely.
Well, with that in mind, can you tell us how our learning community can contact you by email and or by phone?
Yeah, they can reach me at Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at mindsets.com. That's the number 7, mindsets.com. And if they like, they can follow the Twitter at 7Mindsets. They could go to 7Mindsets.com and sign up for the free blog and the quote of the day. But I'd be happy to help your listeners any way I can.
Great. Thank you. So with that response, we'll bring today's edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. We invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. And also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. You know, Scott, everybody can't be like Monique Wilson, who actually just walked over from my office and said, you need to have this guy on the show. Some people do need to be able to just send me an email, and certainly I do look at all those emails. So for those of you interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the EMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect with us and sign up for an information session. Join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with passionate people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.